You know, maybe next week you'll have the highest.
I thought I had a good understanding of the session.
Well, we'll work on it. Interestingly, if you looked at that second output, item 93 was the worst. The worst from the largest standard deviation difference last week, and 93 was the worst this week too. So we really, so we got to really bang on that item 93. So we're waiting for Margarita. She's in your class.
Yes.
So your sister's keeper. Where?
Once again. Yeah, no.
Hello. All right, so we had so much to do today. Unbelievable. But first, we're going to talk about the data entry. So you guys were finished with the Manhattan data time point data, you know, the data we entered in October, January, and May. All done. Great. Thank you very much. Now we move on to the part two. Woohoo! Part two of the data entry for 2018-2019. It's the session data, so it's session by session, and there are three instruments that we're going to be entering into our Excel spreadsheets, which Amanda's going to work on. So you won't be entering data this week. We'll hold off until next week, but I wanted to review the three instruments. So it's a lot less to absorb because there's only three instruments, and one of the three instruments actually you're already familiar with. So that's great. One of the instruments is called the Therapist Response Questionnaire. You can see up here. And Therapist Response is just a simpler way of saying countertransference. That might mean something more to you or not, I don't know. But it's the therapist's feelings about the patient. So what the therapist did, and there was some resistance to it, I guess, according to my colleague, Carla Rentrop, at IPTAR, where this was done, or the De La Salle Academy, she said that a lot of therapists really didn't want to share their personal feelings about the group members. So, but we collected what we have, and so each session, each therapist for each session filled out a therapist response questionnaire for each member of the group. So the average number of members in each group was about 8. That's what we were shooting for. So after every group, the therapist, and remember there are 2 therapists per group, and there are 4 groups. So 8 therapists filled out questionnaires on 8 students each. So that's 4 times 2 is 8, times 8, 64. So presumably, we have 64 therapist response questionnaires for every session, and the sessions were weekly. I don't, you know, based on that little bag I gave you, I don't think, right? So what you'll do is you'll just, there's a very long ID number that you're going to be entering before every questionnaire. And that long ID number will tell us the therapist, the group, and the date of the session. But all you need to worry about is entering that ID number before you enter the data of these 3 questionnaires. Anyway, this is the therapist response questionnaire, and these are questions that go from 1 not true to 5 very true, very simple. I'm very hopeful about the gains he or she is making or will likely make in treatment. At times I dislike him or her. I feel it exciting working with him or her, etc. There are 79 of these items. All the way up to, I talk about him or her with my spouse or significant other more than my other patients. Why are you talking about patients to others anyway. It's confidential, but that is what it is. So that's the first questionnaire. Any questions about this one? So it's designed to tell us something about the therapist's feelings about the patient. Of course, one easy hypothesis to formulate based on this instrument is, do the therapist's personal feelings about a patient have anything to do with the patient's outcome? Right? So that's a very obvious question to ask of the data. But that's why we included this instrument in the study. So that's a weekly instrument that's administered. The second one I want to talk about is the YOQ30. Now, you guys are familiar with this because this is one of the time point instruments. So you've already got this one in the bag. This is 30 items having to do with various symptoms. And you rate them from 0, never, or almost never, to 4, almost always or always. Right? And so there should be checks all down from 1, I have headaches or feel dizzy, 2, and this is, of course, a self-report. So the children themselves, the adolescents themselves are filling these out. 2, I feel I don't have any friends or that no one likes me. Okay? Same idea with the ID number, right? It should be one row per ID number. So you'll be entering these three questionnaires all in a row. Now, I took a look, and I don't think many of these were completed at all. So if it's not completed, you just leave it blank. You leave those items blank. You don't put anything in. And then the final questionnaire, which you haven't seen yet, is called a group session rating scale, GSRS. And there are only 4 items. There's a relationship item, a goals and topics item, an approach or method item, and an overall item. And these 4 items are rated on a continuum. Let's take relationship, for example. I did not feel understood, respected, and or accepted by the leader and or the group. All the way to, I felt understood, respected, and accepted by the leader and the group. And similarly with goals and topics, approach or method, and overall. Overall, there was something missing. Group today, I did not feel like a part of the group. 2, overall, today's group was right for me. I felt like a part of the group. So it captures the student's or child's feelings about having participated in that particular group on that particular day. Taylor?
How are we expected to rate this by numbers?
Okay, that's my segueing right into it. Thank you. So the instructions that the child is given is take a pencil and put a line anywhere. Time to wake up. Put a line where you feel you are on each of the continua. So let's say relationship, I generally felt understood. I'll put a line here. Goals and topics, we did not work on or talk about what I wanted to work on or talk about. Kind of in the middle. Approach or method, the leader and or the group's approach is not a good fit for me. I thought it was generally a good fit. Overall, today's group was right for me. I felt like a part of the group. Generally. So what we're going to do is, I need to order more rulers. Yes, these are very nice metal rulers, and one day I invited my daughter in here a couple of years ago, and she took one of the rulers, and it is sticking behind that chalkboard or that whiteboard there. So I tried to get it out. I'd have to remove the bottom part to get it out. So thanks to Carlin, one of the rulers is back there. But anyway, I need to order more rulers for people. So what you would do is you would take the ruler on the centimeter side, like so. From the left edge, like so, and you would count the number of centimeters, and this is down to millimeters. So 10.2 centimeters would be 10 centimeters plus 2 millimeters, right? 10.2 centimeters or whatever it is. And that's what you enter into the Excel spreadsheet, 10.2, 5.4, whatever it is. That's how we are going to measure people's responses to these four items. So it's from the left. Make sure it's the centimeter side. And I was talking to Holly Rosen, who was the project coordinator for this particular project last year, the data entry, and she said that some kids, they create a very thick line. And so what do you do with that? So she said that she instructed students last year to measure to the left part of the line. So where the line, where the left part of the line starts, that's where you would measure to. Got it?
Right. Okay, so even if it's like, I draw on the board.
Yes, you may.
So even if they draw a line like, you know, like this, would that still be to the left or to like the middle?
I'd say pick the leftmost part, okay, just to be uniform,
okay,
consistent.
What's that? The left.
The leftmost part of the line. So then we're all doing it the same way. Amanda.
I was looking at them, a lot of them have boxes or circles or dots, something like that. So I'm assuming the middle, or would it still be the left?
If it's a circle, I guess in the middle. An X would be right where the X intersects. The intersection. What?
Nothing else.
Oh, okay. Any questions about this instrument? Make sense how you would code it? So it shouldn't take that long. I mean, how long does it take to measure four lines? And then you enter them, enter the four results into the Excel spreadsheet. Okay. Now, Amanda's going to work on creating an Excel spreadsheet like she did with the other data and uploading it into Google Drive so you can all work from the same spreadsheet. And we will start next week with that, right? She has the data, but we're going to distribute it next week. Got it? So you got another reprieve from doing the data entry. Do you calculate at all how long you think, how many weeks it might take? Doesn't look like that much, but okay.
Seems like all the instruments are quite short.
3 weeks, including the time it would take to do one Q sort. You know what I'm saying?
So hours.
Yeah. So how long has it been taking to do a Q sort? You read the transcript. And then you do the Q sort. 2.5
Yeah.
So you would calculate 3.5 hours per person, mm-hmm, and then figure out. So it's 3.5 hours per person. There are 8 of you.
Right.
Well, you would do less because you're coordinating it. Seven.
Yeah, I think
7
so
times 3.5, and then over how many weeks? Yeah.
I'll do one.
Okay. Now, just for Amanda's sake, I just wanted to open up something else here. So the TRF, the Therapist Response Questionnaire, has the items here. And I have an SPSS file, which I sent around to everybody. You obviously wouldn't be able to open it on your laptop, but you'd be able to open it downstairs in the computer room. If you look in the, have you, you know anything about SPSS? Okay, so in the variable view, you'll see that the items are actually, I forget which student did it, but they're actually here. And you could actually, if you wanted to, just copy. And then open up Excel and paste it in Excel if you wanted to do that. I don't remember when you did it for the time point. Okay. So that would be an option if you wanted to do that. All right? Okay. So. Everybody clear with that? All right, great. So number two, before we get into sorting that you did for today, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Palak's ingenious find here. She did some homework and she found an instrument that looked very promising vis-a-vis our proposed poster. So I sent around the actual instrument itself. It looks like this. And then there's a manual that I found online. It looks like this. So you guys can take a look at that. And then I also sent you earlier in the week, but I also repeated it today, what I found. So I had a student over 10 years ago complete a study in which he used something called the adjective checklist. And I don't know if you read it, it was just a couple of pages, but there's a series of adjectives, and you rate them from -2 to +2. But I haven't looked at it very carefully, but I kind of like what Palak sent around. I don't know if people have any feelings or attitudes about it. The nice thing about Palak is that then you actually sum the items into two categories. One's positive affect, and one is negative affect. So you have two totals for every ORI. You'd have two totals. You have a positive affect total and a negative affect total. So then we can correlate each one of these variables with the childhood PTSD scale rating. You like it? You say why? You thought you were just going to get away with, I like it?
No, I was just like trying to validate how the process is happening. I like that you found a form that looks at positive and negative effects. It's pretty fun.
I think it's great, as I said in my message, and I think it's easy to use. How many different adjectives are there? There are 30 items. So there are, yeah. So I think it's cool. The instrument that I sent out has more adjectives, but I don't think it's used as much in the literature as the PEN-S. I was looking around, and it seems like there's more to that. And also, we have to be sensitive to the amount of time this is going to take to do this poster, and so. An instrument with fewer items might be a little bit easier for us to manage as the weeks go on. So what do people think?
Yours, correct me if I'm wrong, yours looks at the five factors of personality.
Yeah, it's based on a theoretical model called the Big Five. I don't know if you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. What?
Like the ocean.
Yes, yes, ocean, exactly. That's what it's based on.
So I wonder if that's more simple.
If what?
More simple.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is.
So with our time,
you're probably right. So, huh? More streamlined?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. So So given the fact that we collected data over 4 years, and we're right around 100 subjects, and we collected the ORIs 3 times. So we're talking about roughly 300 ORIs to code using this. So there are 8 of you, right? So 8 times what is 300? 38, something like 37? Plus 37.5, thank you. Plus, we need to overlap about 20% of the sample to get a reliability estimate. So you have to add in 1/5, so 1/5 would be 60, right? Yeah, 60. So add another 60 divided by 8, which would be 7.5. So 37.5 plus 7.5 is 45. So each person in this room would have to code 45 ORIs using this instrument. Is that doable?
Over the course of the year.
Yeah, I mean, right, whenever we start. Huh? Well, okay, so here's another, so that's a good point. So there are 4 different ORI responses that we could code. Now, Palak had mentioned only the self, but we could look at the other 3 as well, in which case that would mean times 4, so 45 times 4, which would be 180 per person. Yeah, looking
I'm
around.
Way too much in this
no, no, no. Amanda.
So how is it coded exactly? Like, I'm looking at the adjectives on here. Is it like the response has to include words? Or...
I just got this afternoon. I mean, Palak, do you know more? Have you read more about it? Maybe you could tell us a little bit if you feel. Well, what if there's an adjective that's sort of like, so I see ashamed on here. What if the person used the word embarrassed? Would that count?
I was actually looking at the three five. There is like a slogan. So I couldn't find that anywhere if anyone of you knows. So it has those basic feelings. For example, sad, and then it goes on in this
All the synonyms?
Yes. I just don't know what.
What?
Nothing. I just need to stop interrupting.
Okay. Taylor's out of control today.
I'm out of control.
If you could find that, and maybe we could use that as a sort of a guide, but I also wonder whether what you're talking about might also be located in the manual. Right, so it's a 28-page manual. I haven't begun to look at it because I just downloaded it this afternoon. But, you know, Palak, maybe you and others who have an interest in this could take a look and see, you know, how you would rate synonyms and whether there's a list of synonyms for each of the items in the questionnaire. Right,
extra.
Right. This is the wheel of misfortune.
And then, yeah.
There's a happy side.
What?
There's
a happy side.
Yeah. Oh, there's a happy side.
I guess it's interesting that you're sad. Whenever I'll figure that out in therapy. there's like that third circle.
Are we okay?
I'm fine. That third circle that goes to like remorseful, stupid, inferior, isolated, empathic, and sleep
At least you're not feeling dopey.
I'm a little dopey.
So it's like the seven dwarfs, right?
Generalize some of those emotions that are in your PANS, PANAS. So if you see alert,
it does have in the manual I'm looking right now, it has like composition of each sections of fear encompasses afraid, scared, frightened, nervous.
Oh.
So it, yeah, it's in the manual.
Okay, it's in this manual.
Yeah, just like
that. Okay, great. What page is that? Page two. Page two, okay.
It's page six in the PDF, but it's page two. And it's just on the top part, where it says item composition.
Let's see here. So this is kind of like the guide we would refer to if we had questions about a particular word, how it would be rated. Okay? So Palak, I'm going to leave it to you to really read more about this instrument. If we're going to go with it, I think you should take the lead on this. You're the first author. And when you know it well enough, then you can teach it to the rest of us. How would you feel about that? That's all I ask, that you try. So we'll do that, but how do people feel about rating 180 ORIs? Now these ORIs, usually they're like a couple of words, right? Each person does 180 versus 45.
How long does each one take? That's the question.
Well,
I'm an estimate. 5 minutes each?
I would say, yeah, I would say 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
Yeah. So it's six per minute. Six goes, this is how I think. This is how a researcher thinks. So six into 180, right, is 30 minutes. So it's 30 minutes of work here.
I don't think it's 30. It's probably an hour. It's probably at least an hour.
A solid hour.
Let's just say it's 5 hours or even 6 hours. It would be.
It's still fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's still fine.
Okay, so we'll do all four: mother, father, therapist, and self. It gives us more to report on in the poster, right? The way we're currently conceptualizing it, we only have two correlations to report, right? The correlation between positive affect and PTSD. And negative affect in PTSD. Now we've got more going on. We got positive negative affect for self, mother, father, and therapist. That's eight correlations instead of two with the PTSD scale. And then we also have PTSD. That the childhood PTSD scale probably has subscales. So that increases even more the number of correlations that we can report in the poster, which is great. Because you always want to be able to report something significant. And the more correlations you run, the more likely it is that you'll have something significant. Because if for no other reason, you're increasing type 1 error. But for a poster, it's fine. So how does that sound? Everybody on board? All right. So let's... Palak will do some homework on learning the instrument in much greater depth. And then at some point, we'll have Palak do a training for us. You can do it. I know you can. Now I'm going to write the best letter recommendation I've ever written for anybody. Okay. You got a pretty good one.
I got an amazing.
Yeah, yeah. See, so I write good letters, right? Yes, I do.
What
did
you get
it
for?
This
program.
I knew Taylor before.
Oh, you were working. Wow, that's incredible. That's
yeah.
Not a recommendation to get for this program.
Yeah. So I mean, Palak is in Taylor's shoes, basically. No, absolutely you are. So you could train us, and then we could get the data from my office and distribute it, code it. The entering wouldn't be that difficult at all. And I would do the analysis. I'll do the statistics. Poster done. Let's go home. All right, so we're settled on that. Everybody's sold on this project. The nice part and the bad part about these ORIs is that the adolescents, they write just a few words. You know, like they're not really going to give you a lot. So the nice part is that it's easier to code. There's not much there. The tough part is that they don't give you enough, and you know, maybe it's not enough to really show up in the correlations with the PTSD scale. But you know, we'll see. Posters don't have to be, unlike journal articles, posters don't have to be have significant findings, right? You just have to write a great abstract, a killer abstract, and get it accepted, and then that's it. So that's another thing. So, Palak, you're going to work on a draft of the abstract? Have you ever written an abstract before? Amanda, do you want to help her with that? All right. I don't think APA has sent out a call for submissions yet, have they? In November. Have they given an actual deadline yet? December 12th. Okay, so that's less than 2 months away. I definitely want to get a shot at revising the abstract. Okay, great. I thought you did that already.
I didn't send the
abstract. Okay, yeah, that would be helpful. Yeah, do you know the word length for APA? 250. Okay. Do we have any trauma experts in the group? I'm sorry, I should have clarified that from a academic literature point of view. No? Huh? Well, somebody who's, I mean, were you guys on the trauma team? Okay. All right, so you know generally the childhood trauma literature, maybe?
Yeah.
So maybe you can help Palak with that part of it. Because you're going to need like a couple of sentences for in the way of a lit review. Right? How are we situating this study? Like, where does it fit in with the rest of the literature? They're only looking for a few sentences, but I think it's important to nail that part of it. Okay. All right, we've got 35 minutes, and I want to now turn our attention to the PQS. Yes. So these were your correlations. Let me just explain briefly. We're going to focus mostly on the other output, but I just wanted to show something about this. So you're probably wondering, what the hell is this? Everybody else has their initials in front of them, but this one doesn't. So the data that you're coding for practice was first coded by a PQS team here at LIU back in probably 2006 or 7, somewhere around there, for a doctoral dissertation. And these sessions were not conducted here. They were conducted at Cornell. Yes, it was inpatient. Yeah. So I was bequeathed these sessions from my former supervisor and colleague at Cornell, and he's given us total permission to use these sessions for training purposes. So that's where they come from. So when these sessions were used for this student's doctoral dissertation, what I did was I had every session rated by two students. And what I did was I averaged the two students' ratings together. I also checked their reliability, right? So very high reliability between the two students, and I averaged the students' ratings together and got a composite or an average rating. These were students who were totally trained by me and trained to be reliable. They were certified reliable in the PQS, which I'm hoping you all will be at some point. That's what this is. That's the aggregation of the two students who coded this session. So I was correlating your ratings with their composited rating on this session that was conducted many years ago. Everybody got that? Okay. So then we open up the second output file. So this column here is the, that's why you see 6.50. You probably were thinking, if you looked at it, what is that? Well, or 1.50, right? So obviously one student rated this item 45, as a 1, and the other student rated it as a 3 or something like that, right? All right, actually a 2. So the average of 1 and 2 is 1.5. So that's why you get these 0.5s. Okay? So I'm using this as the gold standard for this training. So when I see a 2 and then I see 2 9s here, you know, we've got to talk about this item because we're not getting it. This item 93 is... therapist is neutral. So in the eyes of these two students who are now expert raters, they view this therapist as not being neutral. Very uncharacteristic of the session. Therapist was not neutral. So so we have so 2 is the gold standard. We got 991. Two, three, seven, seven, three. So this is why this item was the one with the largest standard deviation. So this is the standard deviation column. And what I did was I had SPSS sort the standard deviations from highest to lowest, to give us a sense of which items to work on in here. So the item with the highest standard deviation, which was 3.19, was item 93, which incidentally was exactly the same item had the highest standard deviation last week. So we're still not grasping this item very well. And I wanted to open up the discussion. What? Meaning you said this therapist was his or her neutrality was the very most, yeah, yeah. Anybody want to?
I was totally wrong.
I thought he was very neutral. Yeah. All he said was, okay, for like the entire thing.
Right.
Except for at the very end, he said something that I highlighted was not neutral, but for the most part, he
So what were the non-neutral things?
I highlighted, it's absolutely certain that this is going to happen here. You will probably lose your family, and I think there's a very good chance you will die. You will commit suicide.
No, but that has nothing to do with neutrality.
Of course it does.
Yes,
why?
It does.
This is great.
This is great. So. This is why you got it. You scored at 9, which was wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Why does that have to do with neutrality?
Because he's stating an opinion and also his feelings.
Yeah. So like last week, I would have rated him like super unneutral based on the comments. But based on our conversation last week, where if it's an opinion based on like what is going on in therapy, I thought that meant it was a neutral statement.
He's telling
right.
you what to do.
He's making a prediction. That's not an interpretation.
He's saying you're someone who will
act out. If that's someone that's neutral, then I'm afraid of that person.
It's not neutral at all.
He's saying, like,
okay.
So this is how I respond to Amanda. I hear you that for most of the session.
But it was salient, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How much more salient can you get?
Right.
So
I
you're going to kill yourself.
Said it a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or
she.
Right.
Fail.
Right.
So
no, has to be lower. He's making a prediction. This patient's going to kill themselves. It's so salient. That's probably the most salient part of the session. That's the crescendo to that. It's fortissimo. Think about it as music. That's fortissimo. If you're a music person, two Fs. But that's salient as it gets. You know what? So there's an item called sexual issues are discussed. Let's say I'm working with a patient, and the patient says to me, "I want to have sex with you." And I say, "Well, we can't do that here. I'm your therapist." And it moves the whole thing moves on to another topic. That is the session. That is the session. Even though it took up maybe 10 seconds, that is the session. So sexual issues are discussed. 9.
Really? It's always. Well, that's a 9. Yeah.
Come on.
So
or
it's not
you are going to kill yourself. I know it. You're going to kill yourself if you.
Yeah, for sure. That's right.
Okay, I mean, that's not neutral.
I just didn't.
I'm not. I want to say something here. Just because this patient, this therapist said that, doesn't mean it's bad. I mean, I actually agree with. With what the therapist said to the patient. The patient needed to hear that, but it's not neutral. Sometimes you can't be neutral. The patient's going to kill themselves, and you trying to save their life, you're not going to be neutral. You're going to be not neutral, even if you're psychodynamically oriented. You're going to be not neutral. You're going to stand on the side of life and survival. And so not being neutral might be a good thing. We're not rating what's good or bad or whether the therapist is good or bad or doing the right or the wrong thing. We're just rating what's going on in this session. The therapist was not neutral. He was not neutral. Marguerite.
I think where I got confused was I read that differently. Like, I read it more of like, if you keep going down this path, like, that's what's going to happen.
It's still an opinion and it's a prediction. It's a prediction.
No, but he was stating it in more of like a factual sense, like chances are, people in your situation die. But that's not. I didn't feel like he was expressing it as like an opinion, like I think, you're a weird person, kind of opinion.
You can be not neutral and not say bad things or mean things. I thought this was a very loving thing that he said.
But you don't see like how maybe. Seen as not necessarily an opinion, but more of like him informing the patient of the facts.
It's an opinion. It's definitely an opinion.
Okay, so this is where I'm so confused on like opinion versus interpretation.
Okay.
Because to me, they seem like the same exact thing at this point. Because like an interpretation is an opinion that they use to help them through therapy, but in this case, this opinion is not neutral.
he's not interpreting anything, right?
Well, isn't he interpreting, like, based on...
Interpretation would be like, you know, I think that maybe you feel like hurting yourself right now because, you know, your mom's in the hospital and you're worried about her and you don't want to be around to feel that pain.
So giving an explanation to why she would be suicidal would be
an interpretation.
But saying straight out, like, okay, so if you were saying, like, your marriage is going to end, that would be an opinion.
Yeah,
but, like, your marriage might be failing because of these reasons, that would be an interpretation.
Yeah, you know, you have a failing marriage,
mm-hmm.
and I sense that maybe your marriage is failing because it's what you know, it feels familiar, because when you grew up, your parents got divorced, and there's a certain comfort in going back to your childhood that way and having a failing marriage. It brings you back to your childhood. Something like that. That's an interpretation. I'm not being neutral, I'm just stating it how I'm interpreting the data, and they're welcome to disagree with me. But, you know, your marriage is going to fail if you keep drinking.
That'd be just opinion.
If you keep drinking, your marriage is going to fail. There's nothing interpretive about that. I'm making a prediction.
Got it. I think that makes more sense. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets are going to have a losing season. Okay? That's not an interpretation. I'm making a prediction based on some pretty good history. But, you know what I'm saying? So,
but saying, like, the Jets are bad because they have no secondary position.
Exactly. So then you're interpreting the causes of their failure.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, all interpretations are an opinion in that sense,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're sharing how you're organizing the information. And, you know, from a Freudian point of view, you're organizing the unconscious information, the information that they may not have access to. Right? But you think you do have access to it because you're more objective and you can interpret a dream in a way that they never could because they're not objective about themselves. Self-deception is so prevalent in a person's day-to-day life that you need a therapist in order to look through the self-deception. But you're interpreting what you hear and what you see. So in a sense, it's an opinion too, but I would say it's a qualitative difference between interpretation type of opinion and what we're talking about here, which is like a prediction, flat-out prediction, which has no interpretive value. But saying you're going to kill yourself, I'm not giving this person any insight into the sources of their distress. Why do they want to kill themselves? What's going on in their lives that makes them want to do that? What are their motivations for doing it? Are they defending against something else? All that's being ignored. I'm just saying, you're going to kill yourself. Now, I'm not saying that that's not helpful. In this particular case, I think this was very helpful for the patient to hear that because it gets them to sit up and take notice. Here's somebody I respect, an authority figure, telling me I'm going to kill myself. I got to listen to this. At this time, he felt that that was more important than making an interpretation of the suicidality. Does that help? Everybody got it?
Yeah.
All right. Even if you don't really agree, pretend you agree. Take an as-if perspective because we all got to see this the same way in order to get high reliability. So we just define neutrality as I've defined it, and then we'll go from there. All right? Got it? All right, so the second largest standard deviation was item 30. And what is item 30? Discussion centers on cognitive themes about ideas or belief systems.
placed toward characteristic end of dialogue emphasizes particular conscious ideational themes, beliefs, or constructs used to appraise others, the self of the world. For example, therapists suggest they look more closely at a patient's idea or belief that unless he accomplishes everything he attempts perfectly, he's worthless. So it's looking at a particular belief or assumption that a patient's making. And then uncharacteristic, if there's little or no discussion of such ideas or constructs. So let's go back to the other. Yes, I see. One. So the experts rated it as 7.
Wow.
So it was characteristic. So Taylor is really on point here with the first two. And Brian is in the ballpark too. So
totally.
One is an outlier. Let's see what other people did.
So belief systems and cognitive.
Okay, wait. So Deepak was 7, right on the money. Palak was 5. Margarita agreed with you, 1. And Amanda agreed with you, 2. And Matt was a 5 in the ballpark. So it's Amanda, Margarita, and Eli against the world. Go for it.
She mentioned a lot of some beliefs about herself, but the therapist himself really didn't. That's why I was
exactly. And what do you think?
You scroll up again just so I can see the characteristics.
Huh?
Scroll up so I can see like characteristics.
Sure.
I didn't see any beliefs mentioned.
I mean, I'll say this much too, is I didn't see a lot of it.
Can I just add something? So it's if dialogue emphasizes it, it's not identifying one or the other member of the dyad having to bring it up. It could be just in the dialogue. So if the patient brings it up, that still counts. This is not a therapist item. This is actually a therapist patient item.
Yeah,
it's discussion centers on. Okay.
But I guess if it's on either side.
Okay, we're on the same side.
Yeah.
I was like kind of neutral. But yeah, I thought in the beginning they kind of talked about it a lot.
She started with it and then it just disappeared.
So I think it was there. I mean, I guess I should have seen it more there. But it was there.
Usually when we do these kinds of trainings, if you are plus or minus 2 from the gold standard, that's fine. All right. But if you're outside of that window, that's problematic. So the gold standard was a 7. So if you have anything from a 5 to a 9, I can live with that. But outside of that window is problematic.
So I think my biggest issue was that I assumed the therapist had to be actively involved.
No, it's just discussion, dialogue. It doesn't... There are some items that identify, okay, patient or therapist. And then, so they're roughly, these 100 items are divided roughly into 3 categories. 1 are patient items, 2 are therapist items, and 3 are interaction items. This is an interaction item. This does not belong to either the patient or the therapist. It belongs to both of them. And roughly a third of the items fall into that category. Yes, Amanda. Yes. Yes, exactly. She did. Well, that's a technological term. Like an assumption, like, you know, I don't seem to have any friends.
Got it.
So
never,
you would have to, like,
I'm a bad person.
I have
because
the same thought.
But you can't assume that you know that this is a psychodynamic session, therefore it can this item has to be rated low. You can't
think
that way.
I don't think it was an assumption per se. I just didn't see any. I think like what Amanda's saying, like there was, it wasn't like explicitly about her thoughts. It was more like an interpretive. Like you would have to interpret that she's.
You thought there was a level of inference there that you didn't want to. You didn't want to make. Conscious ideational themes. Beliefs, constructs used to appraise others. So the example here is the therapist suggesting, but it doesn't have to be. That's just an example.
Right.
So maybe if you were looking at that, that might explain why you guys rated it low, because the therapist didn't suggest. They look more closely
right.
at an idea or belief.
Yeah. The word cognitive theme, I don't have experience. See if we say that. The word cognitive themes also threw me up because I thought it meant, like I said, it has to be a dialogue between the two about the patient's cognition, maybe about like restructuring his cognition or something.
You're thinking too deep here.
Okay.
Try to leave the theory at the door. All right. So, you know, it's no secret. This is presumably a psychodynamic therapy that's going on here, but that doesn't mean that cognitive behavioral things don't go on in a psychodynamic session. There are a number of studies to demonstrate, starting with a study conducted by Stuart Ablon and Enrico Jones in 1998 that showed that a lot of psychodynamic interventions go on in CBT sessions. And I'll take it a step further. It's the psychodynamic process that was correlated with positive outcome, not the CBT process, even though they were CBT sessions. It's a landmark study that's now 20 years old, but it's very interesting work. But that's just a long way of saying that you can have a psychodynamic session and there can be CBT elements in it. So don't think that you're just going to put this item low every time because it's a psychodynamic session. Just rate what you see in the session without any kind of theory associated with it. And these are practice, so, you know, I'm telling you they were psychodynamic sessions. But when we go to the real, when we're coding real sessions, you know, I'm not gonna share anything with you about anything about the sessions to keep you as blind as possible to what's going on, so that I have as clean a rating of a session as possible. All right? We've got 10 minutes. Let's go to the third one. Item 9. Rings a bell. Did we talk about item 9 last week? Item 9, the experts put it in pile 6. We've got 8, 8, 3 is a little low. Let's check this next. One is quite low. 2 is quite low. 4 is okay. 7, 7 are okay. 6.
This is
so Palik isn't infallible. So item 9.
Yeah, let's see.
So six is the gold standard, 883.
Impressive.
So, number nine. Therapist is distant, aloof versus responsive and effectively, I think that should be affectively involved. Characteristic of therapist stance toward the patient is cool, formal, detached, marked by emotional retreat or withdrawal. Uncharacteristic of therapist is genuinely responsive, affectively involved. That's a spelling. That's a spelling error. Now this is a hard item to rate. Whenever you tell a patient, if you keep going the way you're going to kill yourself. I mean, that's not being distant or aloof. On the other hand, how was he saying it? Was he being genuinely responsive, or was he kind of being almost challenging and provocative? And not being, like, truly affectively involved. So I think that might be where there's the confusion. People want to address that?
Taylor.
Were definitely encouraging, but I don't think he ever really showed.
What about this emotional retreat or withdrawal? Did you see that? I mean, when he's saying, if you keep going down this path, you're going to kill yourself. This is a case where I might disagree with the gold standard here. I could see a lower rating for this one, like a 3. Because it's when you're saying that to a patient, you can't possibly be aloof. I guess you could be if you're trying to be kind of provocative or almost sarcastic. But I don't know that this therapist was doing that.
Oh, okay. That goes back to my question then. It's like, where is it like one moment in time? Because there was a lot of mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was facing.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to join us?
What?
You want to join us?
Well,
okay, all right.
But I appreciate the offer.
All right.
I hope you're having a wonderful
time. We are. Yeah. See
ya. Yeah, I felt that she was very insightful and was saying a lot of moving things, and that response was always beautiful. Mm-hmm.
So you felt that was aloof? Are there things that you think you would have said in place of those ahums that would have made it less aloof?
I don't know. I feel like really any other response, like if he elaborated at all, I think it would be different. But the fact that the response is always like one more answer, or annoying, not even like a word, stuck out.
Okay, so here's a situation where, on the one hand, we see him being very much affectively involved, right? Like, if you keep going this way, you're going to kill yourself. On the other hand, we see a lot of mm-hmm, anahas and mm-hmm, huh, and kind of aloof. So when you have that, what do you do? And where did the experts put it? 6.
I kind of, thinking back, I think I made a mistake in terms of my rating because it seems like from his methodology, I think that he seemed like a hardcore psychoanalyst. Like, I kind of imagined
mind down and just kind of free, have free association, just talk and talk. And maybe he was kind of analyzing that. Because I think the non-responding was very much intentional. I don't think that was like a normal session where people, you know.
But see, Eli, what you're doing is you're taking an assumption you're making about this therapist, and then you're extrapolating from it. Throw the assumption out. You don't know whether he's psychoanalyst or not.
I'm just saying that was the only explanation I could have for why he would do that. Otherwise, he's a horrible therapist. Like, he really didn't say anything. He said nothing to the client. I would expect to have more of a dialogue.
But he's saying you're going to kill yourself. But
that was all the way at the end. That was like,
yeah.
For the session was pretty long. Did not say anything for 30 minutes and just let the client talk.
So you rated him an 8, right?
I gave him an 8. Because I thought he was not involved at all. And I also interpreted, I thought even if he wasn't, I thought he was intentionally uninvolved, but he wasn't involved. And I didn't really give much credit to his concern about the patient dying. I interpreted it more of as, he was kind of giving the client facts of like, if you continue the way you're going, you're going to die. Not that he necessarily cared about it.
Okay.
Do we know what kind of therapy session it was? Or do we
have what do you mean?
Meaning, was he more psychodynamically oriented?
I'm trying to get you to move away from that thinking.
We
don't care. We just coding what we have, the transcript.
Don't you find it strange, though, that he didn't respond? That he was just humming?
Well, what does that matter?
I don't know,
closer to Freud. We're closer to Freud? So it's only 60 years away from his death. I mean, what are you talking about? Forget about Freud. Forget about the time of history. You're just coding the pages that I give you.
I agree. It sounds like a Freudian. Literally, I feel like that's what Freud used to do. Like, just write down and listen to the client talk and not say anything.
But that's what I'm saying, regardless of what the reason is, he was still.
Right.
Okay, so.
To me.
When he did speak, but I guess it wasn't enough times for most people. So a 6 or higher, okay. You've convinced me. I see people scrambling to leave. So see you guys next week.
Do you have another transcript this coming week?
Yes, I'm going to send you another one to do. Okay. Send you only one.